In today's video, you'll learn about the pivotal role of the private sector in global disaster response. We delve into a company's strategic approaches to natural and man-made disasters, and the importance of public-private collaboration. Discover innovative approaches to corporate disaster philanthropy and the critical role that employees play. Let's make a social impact.
Hi everyone, I'm Carl. Welcome to the Social Impact Show, a channel where you get the latest strategies and tips to help you scale and grow your CSR and goodness programs. So my guest today is Andrew Jones. He's a senior researcher with the Conference Board. And today we're talking about disaster philanthropy practices. So I guess, Andrew, what is the role of the private sector and corporate philanthropy in global disaster response?
Thanks. First of all, thanks so much for having me here, Carl. Great to be here on the Social Impact Show. For those who aren't aware, the Conference Board is a leading nonprofit, nonpartisan, business-oriented think tank that has been serving its member companies and society for over 100 years, actually. And we do a lot of work on corporate citizenship, and that includes the periodic studies into what big corporations are doing in the realm of disaster response and natural disasters and disaster philanthropy. And I think as many of those watching will know, this is a sort of persistent priority issue and a growing challenge for many corporations. So it's a very timely discussion today. So to get straight into it, I think we're all aware, right, that the number and intensity of natural disasters is rising, both globally and in the US. The US actually just last year experienced $28 billion disasters. So that's natural disasters that caused at least $1 billion in damage, which is the highest on record. So you know, these are difficult and scary times, right? And in this difficult context, the private sector is playing an increasingly important role, both in the US and globally. And private companies, especially the large multinationals that have big presence, can bring a lot of resources to the table in terms of their money, their philanthropy, their personnel, their expertise. And while it's hard to get at specific stats, where we estimate that in terms of corporate philanthropy, we think that's about 40% of global philanthropic funding for natural disasters over the last few years. So that's coming from companies or their affiliated foundations. So I guess to put a long story short, companies are a major player now in responding to disasters. And perhaps we can turn later to what they're actually doing. But yeah, it's a big role now. And I think the private sector's role is here to stay.
So what determines, because of all the types of disasters, you know, in different states all over, what determines the expectations the expectation from companies with natural disasters or global disasters, and then what's the determination or the criteria for them to actually respond to, you know, one disaster over another?
We did do a big survey of 100 leading firms, and we asked lots of questions, including sort of these kind of topics. First of all, it's worth adding that, you know, many companies are gearing up for increasing disaster needs. Their expectations are that things are going to become harder, right? Actually, over the next 3 to 5 years, 91% of surveyed firms think disasters will become more frequent, 77% think they will become more intense, and 59% will become more complex. So I think there's a general feeling that this is only getting worse, right? We also asked the same set of executives, what sort of global challenges do they think will most significantly affect their disaster programs? 89% said climate change, right? Not a huge surprise. I think we all know it's climate change that is a major driver of this. But interestingly, a lot also refer to, you know, food security, war and armed conflict, health pandemics. So this is a troubling snapshot, right, of a future characterized by increasing disaster needs and complex global uncertainty. In terms of, I guess, and also I think as disasters become more frequent, it becomes more and more pressure to respond, right? So I think you asked a really good question about how do companies determine how to respond. I mean, for some companies, I think it's often pressure from, you know, media reporting, pressure from internally, from employees, from senior executives. But in terms of, I guess, the key criteria, we actually found that companies are most likely to respond when a disaster affects their operating communities, affects their business world, and has significant need. So you kind of see that in an ideal world, companies should be responding when disasters meet those criteria. In practice, it's sometimes, you know, when the pressure is too hot to handle.
how do companies determine, because there's disaster season, right? There's hurricane mm-hmm. season. So people would know, or companies would know, hey, you know, in this season, we probably need to be aware of, you know, certain, I guess, hurricanes that could potentially have devastating effects. And then there's obviously those disasters that you just, they just happen. Mm-hmm. So I guess, like, how is there sort of like a preparedness for, hey, these are the things that we expect during this season, but then there's also another prepared for, like, just things that come up.
So it's interesting because I've increasingly heard from sort of specialists in the field as well that disaster season is now all year long, right? So yeah, I think it's perhaps there isn't so much more a clear cutoff in those couple of months of the year. But in terms of preparing, I think it's interesting because on the one hand, disasters have become more predictable. While some are obviously always outside the scope of and appear quite sudden, companies can predict them. But I think that does require a strong focus on decision-making and strategic planning. And actually, one of the recommendations we make in our recent work is that it's very vital that companies do conduct strategic planning and simulation exercises, you know, what-if scenarios, to really test the company's disaster response plans and prepare in specific, you know, whether it's vulnerable communities or vulnerable regions. Interestingly, our survey shows that less than half of companies are actually doing that. So I think there's big room for professionalizing and increasing capacity here. Yeah.
So according to your recent research, you know, virtually all companies surveyed provide immediate disaster mm-hmm. relief. Mm-hmm. But how about some things, you know, around preparedness or maybe even like reconstruction, or either the beforehand of a disaster or the after mm-hmm. impact of the disaster?
Most of us probably recognize there's multiple stages or phases to responding to a disaster, right? You kind of have, on one hand, the pre-disaster preparing, right? So kind of planning and preparation like we just spoke about. You have the immediate relief that follows, you know, when a disaster strikes. And then following that, you have the sort of the short term and then the long term recovery and reconstruction, right? So as you said, virtually all of our surveyed firms do immediate relief, right? They commit some resources, whether that's writing checks, doing grants, et cetera. And I think this is quite logical. You know, this is when disasters attract, you know, they've attracted sort of media and public attention. There's pressure to respond, resources get mobilized. It was actually quite reassuring, I think, from our survey that we found that a significant number of firms, actually about 3/4, are also doing sort of short-term recovery, sort of helping those reconstruction efforts. Many more are also doing, you know, the longer-term recovery, sticking around, really helping affected communities rebuild. And an encouraging 42% are actually doing pre-disaster preparedness. I think this is really important, right? Because preparing for disasters, it ensures kind of business continuity. It improves employee safeness and well-being. It's also cost-effective, right? It's always cheaper to prevent a disaster than respond to it. And companies have a lot to offer in this area. Actually, a good example is Walmart. Walmart actually invests significant resources in disaster planning and preparedness across lots of vulnerable and underserved communities that it has stores in, right? And has done a lot in this area. So, I think one of the key recommendations that came out of our work was that disaster preparedness there's some assuring findings, but there's still plenty of room for companies to do more in this area. And doing so may require, you know, closer collaboration with NGOs, government, and vulnerable communities themselves.
So where do you see the largest opportunities or greatest innovations in the future for corporate disaster philanthropy?
I think for me personally, I think where you really see some of the exciting opportunities for innovation is when firms go beyond sort of the immediate kind of, you know, cash donations or donations of goods and services, right, and employee volunteering. And none of that, all those things are important and legitimate and much needed. But when firms go beyond those and actually offer their equipment, right, the facilities, their technical expertise, their intellectual property, I mean, that's when you really see big corporates harnessing their capabilities and their core competences to drive innovation. And a really great example is IBM, right? IBM was a huge technology firm. IBM does really exciting stuff in the humanitarian world. It offers a wide range of open source technologies, including AI systems, so disaster response, and they've been used for all kinds of cool things, right? Where it's tracking supplies, monitoring the spread of disease, modeling traffic to evacuate from fire zones. This is some really, really interesting innovation. I guess it also speaks more generally to the potential for technology in, as a whole, right? You know, I think there's so much potential for AI, blockchain, big data to transform how corporations can respond to disasters. And that's where the real frontier of innovation is, I think.
Yeah. Well, I guess most of the innovation that you're talking about is coming from the private sector too, right? So let's talk about private and public sector collaboration. Mm-hmm. You know, in our previous video, we talked about that type of collaboration relating to investing in rural America, which you can watch a video up here. But what are the opportunities? And are certain companies, I guess, taking advantage of those opportunities?
Mm-hmm. We spoke about this in relation to rural America, and we discussed how when tackling sort of complex societal challenges, they're too big to take on alone, and companies do really need to partner with the public sector. I think you see a very similar story in the realm of disaster, right? And this is particularly interesting because companies rely on a wide range of partners for their disaster efforts, right? But it's typically national or international humanitarian NGOs. It's a lot less common to partner with governments of all sizes, whether they're in the US or overseas. And yet this is a crucial need, right? Because companies often have the resources, the expertise, the innovation that we spoke about, but it's government that can really help direct those resources to where they're most needed and sort of pull knowledge together to inform better decision making. So one of the key recommendations we've really been making in this field is that companies need to more effectively engage with government and to better determine the appropriate roles of the public and private sector. And so that's easy to say and harder to accomplish in practice, but I think there are some practical steps companies can take. And I think a key area is perhaps just simply improving your knowledge, right? Whether that's establishing joint response or preparedness task forces, but focus on specific areas and creating that platform for dialogue and planning with government officials, I think is really crucial to get a sort of grasp on where the needs are and where the gaps are. And this is something that the conference board is actually trying to play a bigger role as a sort of convener of the public and private world. So this is a lot of room for opportunity and deeper collaboration here.
Well, let's drill down to more the, you know, what the actual boots on the ground, like the actual people who are doing the work. So what can corporate social responsibility professionals do from a strategic planning and decision-making perspective to, like, how can they improve that with relation to natural disasters?
Sure. I think this goes back to some of the things we spoke about earlier, right? About, you know, having more refined strategic planning and scenario decision making. I think this really speaks to that. There's a real need for stronger governance here, right? And there's lots of things that CSR professionals can do, but perhaps if I touch briefly on three of them. I think the first of all is ensure internally within the firm itself, ensure you are collaborating and leveraging for across the business, right? Corporate citizenship or CSR, however it's named, is a natural choice to lead in this area, right? But other functions are very important, in particular ESG, sustainability, human resources, employee engagement. There's a wealth of expertise across the enterprise that needs to be brought together here. I guess looking outwards and sort of determining how to respond to disasters, I think it goes back to what we said earlier around sort of developing more formal protocols for determining when and how to respond. So it's not just the emotion of responding and the instinct to respond to every crisis, actually trying to have formal criteria that determine when the company reacts and with what scale of response. And that may be, you know, the proximity of the company's operations, the employee expectations. I think there's a lot of room to really formalize and embed a more strategic mindset here that will particularly help as we enter, you know, an increasing frequency of disasters in the years to come.
Well, so it isn't just about, you know, CSR professionals, and you mentioned a lot about employees. So how important is their role, and like, where do you see their impact in disaster response efforts?
Yeah, I should add at this point that the reason why we did include a sort of spotlight on employees and their role in disasters. And actually this work was undertaken in partnership with E4E Relief, which some of you may know, that's a nonprofit that sort of supports companies to support their employees during times of disaster and crisis and hardship. So we really deep dived into some of these issues. And it's very interesting because on the one hand, we found that employees are the most significant drivers of corporate disaster response, right? That it's often employee expectations and pressure that really shapes and influences how a company responds, right? Which kind of makes sense, right? You know, employees are themselves exposed to disasters. Employees themselves see disasters in the media and expect their company to respond in a certain way. But employees at the same hand are also important beneficiaries of corporate disaster philanthropy. Many of the companies that we speak to actually say that's their number one priority during a disaster, right? That's the first thing they attend to, safeguarding and protecting any affected employees. So companies are supporting their workforce through a wide range of channels, right? And that includes, obviously, you know, mental health support, counseling, flexible schedules, and so on. But what we find quite interesting and a growing phenomenon is that now a majority of leading companies have a dedicated instrument for employee relief, an employee relief fund or employee assistance fund, as they're known. These are funds that provide targeted financial aid to employees who have been directly affected by disasters. We found that 2/3 of companies already have such a fund, and a further 8% are planning to create one. So this is a real kind of mainstream across the private sector now. And interestingly, we asked companies who do have such a fund, you know, what have you been focusing on since 2020? And we found there's been two priority areas, right? One of which is natural disasters, that makes sense. Second was COVID, which makes sense, you know, given the last few years. But a significant minority have actually broadened the scope of their employee relief to include sort of everyday financial hardship, everyday sort of emergencies, mental health issues. It's quite interesting seeing companies taking an instrument that's at its heart designed for that sort of emergency response and broadening it out in general. So I guess to really summarize, yeah, employees are just critical in disaster philanthropy, whether they're driving it or whether they're receiving it.
So we've been focusing on natural disasters, but does this also cover man-made disasters, more so like armed conflict, right? So like, how does that impact the social impact efforts?
So we have a lot of geopolitical instability, and obviously we have armed conflicts we're currently witnessing, right? The Russian invasion of Ukraine, which is close to, at the time of recording, is close to approaching its 2-year anniversary, and more recently, the ongoing crisis in Israel and Gaza, right? And much of what we discussed does apply to armed conflict and war as well, right? You know, in terms of emergencies, companies should ensure they have strong internal governance, strong decision-making, sophisticated partnerships, utilize your core capabilities and focus on your own workforce. I think it's very similar guidance to natural disasters. I think where armed conflict and wars fundamentally differ is that companies must also navigate complex geopolitical and security landscapes that often have extreme levels of political sensitivity. And to give you an example, the Russian invasion of Ukraine, many companies obviously wanted to help, felt pressure to act, but it brought with it some really complex considerations, right, around sort of complying with US sanctions and exiting Russia, you know, and actually the question of how do you provide relief during a sort of a volatile urban conflict. I think similarly, the post-recovery process is also very different. Yeah. Post-disaster recovery typically is physical rebuilding and restoration, right? Post-conflict recovery can involve rebuilding governance structures, infrastructure, the very social fabric itself, right? So it's a much more complex and sensitive and difficult challenge for companies. So I think there's a lot from the natural disaster playbook that applies to armed conflict and war, but it's not quite the same. I think we would ultimately recommend that whatever type of emergency you're responding to, companies should just don't go it alone, right? Work closely with your international partners, your local partners, government agencies, and also your industry peers, right? It might not be natural to collaborate with some of your rival businesses and industry competitors, but actually this scale of these challenges make it important to think beyond a single company response.
So there's so many topics to cover around natural disasters and you know, corporate efforts to in response to that. But if our audience wants to connect with you and learn more about what the Conference Board does, what's the best place to reach you?
I'd really welcome anyone who wants to connect. As I mentioned at the outset, we do a lot of work on this. You can find me quite easily through LinkedIn. It's simply Andrew Jones at the Conference Board. Also, you can simply go to the Conference Board website. We have a a vast array of resources there, much more than just corporate citizenship, but you'll find a lot relating to natural disasters and also a lot of resources relating to geopolitics and navigating some of the more recent conflicts. So we have a lot to offer in this area and a lot of sort of trusted insights for what's ahead. So do feel free to connect.
Thank you for listening to The Social Impact Show. Make sure to rate, review, and subscribe. Then visit benevity.com to access some of the resources mentioned in this episode, along with tons of other insights to help you grow your program. Music provided by Ikeson. For questions or topics you want us to cover, reach us at podcast@benevity.com. Until next time, be a force for good.